Hello, beautiful alchemist. Happy Monday. I am Yolanda. I'm your host here on Reiki Radio, and I thank you for joining me today for another conversation about our work within this realm of spirituality, and today, more specifically, with Reiki and shamanic energy healing. So we have an incredible guest today. Her name is Rosalyn Acosta. And she is an artist and dancer, but she is also a practitioner of Reiki and energetic healing, specific to the tools used within shamanism. So, we are going to talk about what shamanic energy healing is. We're going to talk about her expression and connection to Reiki. We also explore the way that she blends these two modalities while also acknowledging their perfection in their individual states of practice. So we have a great conversation. I hope that it will inspire you or cause you to reflect a bit on your own practice or pique your curiosity if any of this is new to you. Another thing about Rosalind that is unique is she does ecotourism, wellness retreats, and we will talk a little bit about that. In 2025, she has some retreats coming up in Hawaii, Peru, and Turkey. But that aside, she also has an offer for all of the community members here, everyone listening. So I will put the link to her special offer down in the show description. You'll hear more about that in the show as well. So I hope that you enjoy this episode. I want to thank Rosalyn again for joining us. And I want to remind all of you, if you want to join me for live discussions about Reiki, your practice, about what you hear on the podcast, you can join me on Tuesdays in the Reiki Roundtable chats. They are free. And the link to join is available on the Energetic Alchemist app. So if you haven't downloaded the app yet, be sure to do that. Just go to the Apple App Store, put in the Energetic Alchemist in your search. Or if you have an Android, go to the Google Play Store and search for the Energetic Alchemist. All right, my loves, I will see you on the other side. Hello, everyone. We are here with the beautiful Rosalyn Acosta. I want to tell you first, welcome to the show and thank you for being here today, love.
Thank you, Yolanda. I'm so happy to be here today. I'm looking forward to our chat.
I'm looking forward to our chat because, just so everyone knows, we are talking about Reiki and shamanic energy healing and kind of diving deep into these different layers and aspects of healing. But Reiki and shamanism are a constant curiosity and topic that people want to know more about. So, I want to start with just a little bit of your background. Like I said, looking at your work, I see that you're a dancer, you're an artist, and then you have this healing aspect to your life. How did this come into your radar, Reiki and the shamanic energy healing?
I've had lots of different career pivots, but when I look back at it, everything's always had some sort of well-being aspect. So I went to a university in Edinburgh, Scotland, and got my master's in ecotourism, and I've worked in sustainable travel for over, 12, 15 years, right? And doing, whether it's doing research at Crest at Stanford University or going working for other companies or creating my own tours. I've always worked on this well-being aspect when I didn't really call it that, in that realm of helping local communities thrive from sustainable travel income, as well as helping the environmental conservation aspects of it. So I worked in that, and then I've also always been a dancer my whole life, a former professional teacher and dancer, and I will continue to dance forever. But that, because that fuels me, like that fuels my spirit. That's for my well-being too. And then the universe just kind of sent me on the energy healing path, which is like, boom, you need to do this, right? So sent me to find Reiki teachers. It just kind of brought them to me, and then also my shamanic training, and just I've just didn't look back, right? So I've just been wholehearted going forward.
Gosh, there's so many questions. I want to say that too. I do want to get into the retreats, and you'd bring up a good point of not just traveling to places, but recognizing the ways that we give back to where it is that we may travel. So I do want to talk about that too. But with the Reiki and shamanism, when these modalities came into your life and these systems came into your life, did you already have an expectation, or was it just like a curiosity of, let me see what this is?
No, it was felt like a coming home. I've always been very heightened and open to different clairsenses ever since I was little. And unfortunately, because our society doesn't always welcome that aspect of human beings, because everybody has those abilities, right? You just have to use them, cultivate them, let them grow. But I've always been very heightened in those since I was little, but then felt like I had to hide that part of myself because it was unacceptable. It's only like I tell my mom and my sisters, but like there wasn't a lot of talking about it. So when I found energy healing, I just felt like, okay, I can be myself now and it's acceptable. It's safe to be myself now. And it's just a nice, like I said, a coming home. And that's why I felt like, okay, this is my calling right now. This is my true calling.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about that because a lot of people have this experience, and I had it too. I mean, it's kind of hindsight. Now I look back at why I would feel uncomfortable in certain environments, or why I would shut down around certain people, just things about ourselves that we didn't understand or other people would label as weird and strange. And then energy work really does kind of give you understanding of what it was you were experiencing. So as a younger person, and even as a mother, I'm curious too, like looking back hindsight, was there, aspects of yourself then you're like, wow, if I knew now what I knew then about energy, this is what I would have understood. And do you look for those signs with your children? Do you The interactions with them, do you look to see how they're perceiving the world from that lens of any kind of clair?
Yeah. No, definitely. Like, I feel like if I had, I just remember as a young kid, like, I'm talking about elementary school age, I
Yes.
always would say, what is this that I see and feel? Like, my heart chakra, I could feel this, or I could see it, or just having these different clairvoyant, different experiences, being connected to different people's emotions. And, I just didn't have the tools to, like, okay, also to learn how to create my energetic boundaries to, and like I said, to cultivate these senses. So I would have loved to have had found a teacher back then. But then the universe was still teaching me in different ways. When I think back to different instances, I was still being lessons sent to me, which was nice. And as a mom, I have three young kids, and yeah, when kids, especially before they get to the age where they start to be more insecure and start to pick up on all of that, right? Their inner world is huge, and their intuition and their clairsenses are open, I feel. And of course, they develop at different ages. The different senses can be more prominent and also in different people. But yeah, I just feel like this summer, my oldest son's 11, so I'm actually going to train him in Reiki. See how, and I just feel like it's such an essential tool to have as you grow up. So then you can stay true to your inner self, and you have more resilience to handle stress in life, and you know how to take care of yourself. People are always focused on the physical body, right? But we're never focused on the subtle body. And then they wonder, why am I so out of whack? Why am I depressed? Why am I, like all these different things. And because you're not addressing the energetic body, yourself. So I just want to instill those tools to my kids so they can do what they want with them, but at least they have that knowledge.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, it's one of those things I always think with what we're learning now as adults. I'm like, gosh, why didn't they teach us these things at like kindergarten,
I know.
these different, because you said a big important part of it with talking about your own experience, the self-acceptance that comes. And then that would help to further develop that confidence that a lot of us have to kind of learn to develop in other ways. I think it would help a lot. So let's talk about this because obviously you see the importance to share with your own child with your journey with Reiki. Could you talk a little bit about your personal lens? Because everyone, you know, there are different ways of describing it. Everyone has their own experiences. Could you talk a little bit about your lens of Reiki based on your personal relationship to it?
Well, so I always like to explain it to people in more scientific terms, and that probably goes back to my background in like the conservation sciences, but I feel like that can kind of bridge that gap. So it takes it out of the woo-woo closet,
Right.
right? Which it clearly isn't, but I always talk about how energy healers, we're working in the invisible realm, right? And but then when I tell them a little further, like just to think about it in context, the human eye can only detect, and there are different estimations, but about 0.05% of the electromagnetic spectrum. And so once people think about that, they're like, okay, yeah, there's really such a small fraction that our biological eyes can actually see.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that other things don't exist, right? And so I just explained, so we're working at the subtle body level, which is our nadis, our chakras, our meridians, the luminous energy field, or people also call it the aura. So we're working on in this realm. And so I feel like that's really helpful when talking to people about Reiki. And then I also talk to them about how Reiki is just, you know, we're really cleansing and clearing our chakras for optimal functioning, right? To optimize our health
Right.
and clear up those physical and emotional blockages that are making them feel out of whack. And then I kind of also talk about how I've involved the shamanic energy healing, because I feel like that kind of is more like a surgeon, right? So Reiki works on the chakra level, and so does shamanic energy healing, but it also involves a lot of tracking. So you're tracking on the physical level, the emotional level, the sacred mythical level, and the energetic level. So you're working on all these levels to find information that is, and you're also working in infinity, like moving in between past and future and the present. So I feel like those two modalities are very complementary in addressing so many things and clearing up so many things on the energetic level.
That's really interesting because a lot of people, well, there's a couple of things, right? So, Reiki in of itself, yes, I always say it's so interesting what it helps us to recognize and realize within ourselves. And it points to like a lot of elements in the system point to this like non-dualistic mind, this non-dualistic way of seeing existing all of these things. But then there are these, and in that, even though it opens us up to and provides a lot of healing, there isn't necessarily training in the system that point to very specifically like what you're saying, like what is being held. And I want to say more of an intuitive way. So like where we can sense, you know, if we do Biosyn scanning, we can sense the feeling of energy in our hands. There isn't necessarily training around what other information you may be perceiving. So then on the shamanic side of the fence, there is this kind of open doorway to this is what else is in this person's space. And now, like you said, it's almost like an energetic surgery in a sense of what do we do with it. So I wanted to just to clarify for people like the differences, but how they complement each other. So once you started with the Reiki. And then on the other side of the fence, can you give a little more detail? Because everyone isn't that familiar with shamanic healing. So could you talk about your experience and why you even fell in love with this aspect of healing?
Yeah, I just felt like always drawn to it. And yeah, and like the universe just sent me to to study this.
Yes.
And I just felt like, oh, this is the perfect blend. I feel so Reiki, as you know, like it's more like the person just receives. You just relax, receive the healing, right? And then yes, there's integration that you can do afterwards, because you can't just always receive. Like you have to make those changes in your
Right.
life. And then shamanic healing is a little more participatory. on the behalf of the client to, I think, a little more than Reiki. So it's more for a person who's like, okay, maybe there's this constant cycle in their life that they just can't get rid of, right? Maybe it's like poor finances or always in a bad relationship with the same type of person, a toxic relationship. Like if you have this repetitive pattern in your life, then that'll take effort to clear up. And that's where the shamanic training comes in. And also I found too, like being open to both modalities and the energies. And so when I do a Reiki session on someone, I'll start to get information about other things. I'm like, well, that I could do, down the road if they're ready for it on the shamanic level. Of like maybe it's cutting a cord. I had one client. I did, was working on her, and then I was just like, oh, there's this cord that's connected to her heart actually, and pulling to the right. And there was a person, a divine being, a spirit there. And then afterwards, because she's also very intuitive herself, I wouldn't always share information if someone wasn't ready to hear it. I use caution on what I will share with a client. But that really resonated with her because she had lost her fiance in a car crash. He was sitting on that side of her, and that has pulled her, and just it all made sense to her. And so I was like, it from my understanding, that cord needs to be cut so you can both have your energy be, separate and live to your fullest potential with your energy intact. So all sorts of things will come up when I'm doing a Reiki session too, but I just kind of keep that information to myself and kind of take note of it. If that person wants to go down a path of even more healing, then I can reference that for the information in it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you explained the way that you blend the two, because this is it's into some degree it can be a topic of debate within the community, because there are some people who think, you have to keep the modalities all totally separate, but then there are so many practitioners that do find ways to use these different modalities, whether Reiki and shamanism or Reiki and, I don't know, working with angels, whatever it is. How they can be complementary. And like I could say from my experience, I think it broadens our scope and understanding of ourselves and energy when we do learn from the lenses of these different modalities. So I do want to ask you that. Like, if you think about your personal experience, are there any things you recognize that perhaps Reiki helped you to understand about you or connection to life? And are there other things that the shamanic healing help to illuminate for you? And do they help you to understand each mode? Like, does Reiki help you understand shamanism and vice versa?
Oh, definitely. I feel like just in general, everything is a complement. So when you're talking about, there's the debate in about whether to keep it separate, I kind of look at it as an athlete, it's very beneficial to cross train, right? If you're, that's why they have some football players taking ballet, or like it's good to do that. And I feel like as a practitioner, it helps strengthen, I guess, my practice and my understanding of energy healing. So if I had seen that and I didn't know anything about cords, or I didn't know anything, if I didn't have a prior knowledge of other things that you don't necessarily learn in Reiki training, then I've been like, what do I do with that? Like, how do I help that person? What should I do with this? Or so I feel like, and even though, and I know, like, okay, but that's not for me to do right now. But maybe in the future. But so you just have this tool belt, and it just adds to your tool belt. And that's also for me in my personal life. I, give myself self Reiki. I just implement different aspects of modalities in my daily life, and it all complements each other. And I kind of, I don't know, I don't always like to be so stuck in one, right? Like, this is the way. Like, they're both, if I only learned Reiki, that would be perfect, right? Reiki is wonderful in itself, right? Is a modality, and it is so powerful, you don't need anything else. If I did just shamanic, same thing. Like, they don't need other things, but if you are feeling drawn and the universe is wanting you to do more, then there's a reason, and I wouldn't question it. So, and I don't think anything's wrong or right as
Right.
well.
Yeah, no, that's beautifully said. And I do want to ask you about, because you mentioned it, like releasing cords and these other types of I want to say energetic expressions that can be going on for any of us. Could you talk a little bit about blocks, energy blocks, clearing blocks, and how you found that that may impact us in our regular day-to-day, and then what benefits there are to doing the clearing or focusing on that work?
So I always like to tell people who are, learning about Reiki, or energy healing, that like, so in Reiki we're working on the chakra system, and the Tibetans recognize five chakras, as do the shamans of the Andes. Since the Hindu tradition describes seven, and that's the most well known, that's why we work with the seven chakra system. And there are seven points in the body where there's an endocrine gland and a nerve plexus that join, and so there's those seven parts, and those are the seven chakras. So I really like to explain it to people so that they understand there's a lot going on, right? And so the chakras function, as just like organs of the body. So the first and second, the root and the sacral, they really digest emotional energies and convert trauma into sources of power and light while expelling the heavy energies back into the earth. And when they're like when the first chakra is disconnected from the earth, you're not grounded, and then it can't, when it's really blocked, it can't expel that emotional waste back to the earth. So it slows its spinning. It leads to kind of like a toxic sludge, darkness on it. And then that can impact you. That can, so you really need to balance your chakras, because it impacts your immune system, your nervous, endocrine, glandular systems. Also, by staying clear, it reduces your cortisol and adrenaline, so you're out of fight or flight. So I don't know if I answered your question. I started talking about all the chakras and just like, but I always like to explain it a little more so
The
people just really,
benefit of like clearing any type of energy blocks and these kinds of things.
yeah, and it also works. It's so connected to your brain too. Which people, it's nice for them to know. So, like when your chakras have been damaged, say by emotional trauma, right? That's when your reptilian brain, the more limbic region, right? It kicks in and it dominates the way you feel. So that part of our brain focuses on the four Fs: feeding, fighting, fearing, and fornicating. And so we get into this limited mindset, and we can't break free from that. And you see a lot of that in the world today, right? People are stuck in this part of their brain, right? So once you detoxify the chakras, that frees up your mind, and you start using your prefrontal cortex. It just wakens up your potential, and it's so beautiful, and you don't feel that stuck and confined anymore. So it's so essential in so many ways.
Yeah, it's funny listening to you say this. It reminds me of why I always tell people it doesn't matter if you want to be a practitioner or not, per se. I mean, I think a lot of this work is just, a beautiful tool for us to understand what it means to be embodied, to be human, to be physical and non-physical, and how our entire system works together. Now, in this, aside from just the clearing and how that can support our overall functionality, even like physically and emotionally. Can you talk about the intuitive piece? Because I know that's another thing that you like to focus on in your work. Can you talk about how working with energy goes hand in hand with our intuitive development or recognition?
Oh, definitely. So I always like to preface with saying, for anybody, how many times have you walked into a room or walked past them and you're just like, oh, like their vibes are just, you just want to get away from them, right?
Yeah.
Well, that you are using your clairsenses. There's so many instances that people, they're using it all the time and they don't know it. And so when you're working as an energy healer, you're working on that level. So like lots of times, like in a Reiki session, I close my eyes. I don't want my visual cortex interfering. And then I just, really try to be a hollow reed. Think of from the spine all the way down, just being a hollow reed, getting my brain to shut off. So I'm Rosalind is out of the picture, and I'm just channeling the energy and being as open and clear as I can so my clair senses can switch on and receive whatever information that is needed. And I feel like people are like, oh, you know, like I wish I could do that, but they can't. And it'll be so surprised. It doesn't take much to tap into that, I feel like. It's just even doing certain breathing will kind of switch you into that set mindset, and it doesn't take long. I can go from like, I have to take my kids to school and be, you know, like rush, or whatever, get to the studio, do 5 minutes of breathing, and I'm in that space where I can just, okay, you know, like if, you know, that's if I don't have a lot of time, right? But yeah, so I just feel like it's, and everybody, I feel like has different strengths in terms of clair senses. So I've always, for me, and when I talk about clair senses, another way for people to think about it is just heightened sensing is another phrase you can say. So clairvoyance is a one, which is clear seeing. So you'll see with your inner eye, not your eyes, but and that I see a lot of that during my sessions. That one's a very active one. Clairaudience, where you hear like inaudible to your physical ears, but you hear voices, words, music. And that's one that I use a lot. Claircognizance, which is clear knowing, so you just know through your seventh chakra, and clairsentience, clear feeling, where you sense and you feel others' emotions. So those four have always been very heightened for me throughout my life, and as I've been working as an energy healer, they just, you know, they're even more open, and I can tap into them. There are two that like clairaudience, which is the smelling, and the clairgustance, this tasting. I haven't really experienced those as much. So that'd be fun to kind of just
I
open
had the
those up someday.
clairgustance once. I have to say, it
Oh,
was once. I'm more clairaudient than anything
yeah.
else. And messages seem to come through to me almost like it feels almost like telepathically sometimes. But the clairgustance, I have to tell you, that did happen once. And it was at the beginning of this work. I was taking a totally different kind of training. You know how in classes they partner you with people? So I was working with a partner and we had to tune into each other intuitively. And so I was tuning into her, and all of a sudden I could smell and taste apples. And I was like, what? And I'm allergic to apples, so that's not even my get down, right? So I'm like, what? Like, apples. And I could like feel this presence of a guy, but you know, especially in the beginning, like you doubt yourself. So I was like, okay, I just gotta tell her. I was like, I just feel this presence of this guy, but I keep smelling and tasting apples, like it's overwhelming. And for her, it was her grandfather who had passed away. And he was one of those people that always pushed like apple cider vinegar heals everything. Like he thought apple cider vinegar was like the fix to everything under the sun. So anyway, it made sense. But that was the one and only time. Yeah. It
Yeah, so see, you've
was
just
odd.
shared that, like it always, yeah, it always different for everybody, but yeah, it's just, and I feel like anybody once again can just start working with it, and whichever one, you know, start with one. If there's one that just starts to become activated, you know, work with that, and then you can go on to another. And yeah, it's a fun exploration for sure.
I have to say, Rosalind, even with what you said, it brings to mind, because how you're saying we can learn to go in and out of that intuitive recognition quite easily. And I always tell people when they're like, what do I start with? And whether it's Reiki, intuition, like everything I've ever studied at the foundation is always meditation. And what I started to realize is, you know, meditation is such a beautiful way of training ourselves to access, you know, different states of consciousness. Like we're going from, you know, different brain waves, even. We can shift in and out of different brainwave activity. But through the practice, it does become very easy where you can, you know, like I'm talking to you, but then I know what it feels like when I move into that alpha state. And so you can almost like just direct your mind to that sensation, that knowing of what you feel like in that state. Yeah, but you just bring up a lot of the importance of presence, but also how important meditation can be to help us with our function. So I wanted to just ask you about that really quick too. Was meditation a big part of, your practice, and did you feel that it helped you anyway in working with Reiki and shamanic healing?
And one thing I like to tell people too is like there are so many different ways to meditate, and you can find a modality that works for you. I feel like meditation can be so daunting with thinking that, oh, you have to sit for 30 minutes and do sit for an hour and then sit, and then, and of course that's amazing and wonderful. And if you can take a, like a whole day, right? Or I mean, there's people with little kids too. It's hard, right, to find that time. So for me, at least in my life right now, I do short bursts, like 15 minutes here, and for me, I get a lot out of it, and I can, and I can go deep in a short amount of time. And if life doesn't afford me a longer time, then this is good, and that's fine. And then maybe at a different on a different day, I can have a little longer. But it's essential too. And even with thinking about in the realm of the energetic realm, when you were talking beforehand, I was also thinking too, like shamans also kind of give a not a warning, but just to be also discerning when you're in that realm, right? When you're picking up on energy, it can also be a distraction. So you also have to just, also if you're just like, oh, I just saw that divine being, or or I heard this, or it can also be a distraction. So you, as an energy healer, you also have to, just be aware of that and don't get caught up in everything as well. Just, and then you can really be more discerning on, okay, just, this is information. This is, and just don't get lost, right? And I think that's very important because it could be so easy, especially if it's like oh, so beautiful, you're just like, ah, I could just hang out here for a
Yes, it's funny you say. I'm working on a workbook right now because I'm doing a Reiki retreat in September, and people always, not always, but a lot of times people just want to like kind of rush through level ones and two because they want to get to level three. And I'm like, I really hope people witness the beauty of level one and how it really does focus more on our presence, our direction of mind, and that connection to the physical. Because to your point, when we are even blending, like being present but working in the energetic realms, we still have to know that we're here and like how to direct the mind. And again, kind of that navigation. Anyway, it's like the
It's
mediator
like
between the
I
realms.
kind of feel like that's more of the instant gratification, always rushing, like in Western society, that's kind of what we're programmed to do. And yeah, you can't, there's no timeline. There's yeah, just it's also a lesson for them to like appreciate present moment, their path on it, and they can't rush it. It's just all in its own organic time for sure.
And then to your point, it helps you as you develop further along, learning how to be present and focused and manage your mind, because then when you do be open up and become more aware, you can manage that too, which is a beautiful thing.
And then also like in the shamanic training, so when we did the training, we as the students, you're going around the medicine wheel. So in the medicine wheel, you're starting in the south, right? And the archetype is the serpent. So kind of like the serpent sheds its skin, you're shedding everything that no longer serves you, right? And so you're working on that a long time. Then you move to the west, which is jaguar, and you learn to see the unseeable, the tracking. And then you also learn to just expel fear, just like get rid of the fear that keeps us so stuck, right? And then you move to the hummingbird, which is the north, and like a hummingbird is so still amidst flight with their fast wings, but they have the ability to embark on a sacred journey. So that's like going the next step. And then that's when like you'll do a lot of soul retrievals to reclaim your lost soul parts. And you'll learn how to, travel through those different time spaces. And then also remind you to like, we weren't put on this earth to suffer. Like we have to, so just like a hummingbird will drink from the nectar of life. We went to drink from the nectar of life, and we to feel joy and bliss, right? And then you move to the east, the eagle, where you learn how to, move above obstacles and see beyond, the horizon while having the sight of, okay, there's the path, right? So you are going through this whole process as the student, because if you don't go through healing, then you're going to project onto your clients.
Yes.
And so in the shamanic training, that was vital. Like, you've got to work through your stuff. And there are many times in your life, well, you might go back, like, I need to go back to the South and work on something. And then, but you know, or you might want to do the whole wheel again, like, if you have a whole, whatever happens in your life, right? But yeah, that's just very clear for people to know. Even with Reiki, you need to work on whatever it is that you need to work on before you want to practice on others to really help your clients in the best way, I feel like. And I know that your path is different, but you had that integrity. And because in like Reiki, like we learned, there's really that integral part. Like, you have to have integrity in it. And then
Yes.
that helps you help your clients, right? So
Yeah. But even the point of like the way that you're describing the wheel, and it reminds me again of like Reiki, and that even beyond level one, you get to level two, and the essence of the symbols. I mean, they're really trying to be mirrors for you to help you do exactly that. Like, how do you then work through your own layers of purification, your own layers of, acknowledging the aspects of ourselves, our dual nature, like our lower and our higher, and how we deal with all of that. So, yes, I think for no matter what it is that we study, we hopefully do recognize the ways that it's always bringing us back into our own healing expression. And it's not just to try to help everyone else and not give attention and time to ourselves. That's so important because I think, especially with the world we live in, like you mentioned before, so many people, especially a lot of people, are so sensitive, and you see the hurt and the suffering, and you just want to help everyone else. But we often do lose sight of our own wounding in that. And so, yeah, I think no matter what you practice, it is a gift to become aware of your own, whatever it is you hold, and work through those layers.
And then
So,
you have to come to the point too where you like, because I also feel in the West, we're always focused on fixing. We have to
right.
fix this about ourselves. We have to, there's something wrong. But I feel like there also comes to a point, like, yes, the life, you're always learning, you're always growing, you're always shedding your things that, pop or whatever. So there's always evolution happening within yourself. But you also have to come to a point where you also acknowledge the growth that you have accomplished, and that
Yes.
you don't always have to feel like you're fixing yourself. Like, you can acknowledge your growth, and I feel like people don't do that enough.
Yeah. I feel like you're just taking us through the levels of Reiki. I'm like, yeah, and then level three. The embodiment of. Yeah. But I think I'm really glad, like, all the information that you've shared, I think it'll give people a lot of good reflection, but also even have some more curiosity about their own work, their path, no matter what phase or stage they may be in, within it. But I just realized what time it is, and I want to make sure that I also get to ask about your wellness retreats and what you said at the very beginning about, traveling and recognizing, yes, tourism does feed the economy for different places that we go. But can you talk about the deeper levels of that, like what it is that we can learn and grow through in those cultural exchanges of being in different environments and really honoring that?
Yeah, no. So like, sustainable travel, there's so many different terms, right? Ecotourism, responsible travel, but it's been around a long time, that part of the industry, probably since the 70s. And Costa Rica was really known as the poster child of ecotourism. Just they had it down, just a nice balance, right? And then, so you kind of think of it in terms of, and I'm not knocking people who prefer to travel this way, but if your form of travel is, okay, let's go to the mainstream hotel that's owned by, say, an American company, and it's located over in Cambodia, or, I'm just
Yeah.
picking something random, right? And that money and most of that money is going back to, the corporation, and it's not trickling into the well-being of the community and empowering them, and yeah. So then, so that's the economic flight. So that's one part of sustainable travel, and then also the conservation aspect, because a lot of the mainstream tourism is so detrimental of just the development, the waste. It's just, there's so much. And then like now people talk more about regenerative travel, and then because now, there's also the discussion, well, if you want to be totally like a sustainable traveler, don't travel, because then you're not like emitting all those emissions on a flight, right? So there are all these different conversations that will go on. But then that's why people are like, well, you could do carbon sequestration to offset some of your emissions, like do little things here and there. And then there's also the cultural part too. So I did a lot of research in endangered art forms, which are so tied into in like endangered conservation. There's in Spiti Valley, India, in the Trans-Himalayan region of India, there's an organization called Ecosphere, and they've won so many accolades internationally because they have like solar houses in the Himalayas. They have so many conservation programs. They have there is a rare sect of Tibetan monks that performed this dance called the Buchans. And that was dying out because they didn't have any other younger practitioners. So they were also working, and there are lots of endangered art forms in different areas of the world, but they for different reasons. But so they're really working on that. But or then in, if you look in Guyana, there's the YY basket weaving, and they are, that's more endangered because of the cash economy that came in. To replace those baskets, we'll use like this cheap plastic basket instead. And then also the degradation of the rainforest, which is where they get the supplies for, So there's all these different art forms that are so connected. Art and the environment are connected. When you're at a really an indigenous level, there's no separation between art and nature, right? It's one and the same. So when you start seeing the environmental degradation and everything, you also start to see endangered art forms and culture. So that's another thing that I've been really focused on is in my background, also in the arts. Like I like to provide cultural exchanges, so you're getting to go to a place and take a dance lesson or take, so you're also paying those people and motivating them even more to like, okay, pass this on to the next generation, right? And
Right.
so it's all this one connected circuit, right? And then for the wellness part, since I have my energy healing background, I'm also really just wanting people to be more aware of that when they travel and just tap into the energy. So like we're going to do a Peru trip next summer where we'll meet with a couple of shamans and receive ceremony and blessing and different things. So just kind of integrating the spiritual aspect of places as well, which is really neat. And since I'm heavy in the family right now, because I have a family, that's why I'm just focused on creating some family eco wellness retreats to different places. And
I have to say, there's a couple of things I want to ask about what you just said. One, I saw the retreats you have upcoming on your site, Hawaii, Peru, and Turkey. And looking at the itinerary for each of them, I mean, what you just shared is very clear in your intention for what people will experience. I mean, they all three sound like incredible trips. But you also remind me of when I did a trip to Maui. And did a guided tour to the road to Hana, and it was, a local person that facilitated the trip. And all the way there, which was a very long drive, they there and back the whole time gave us the history of the island, and not just, I don't know, not just like a cookie cutter version or something like this. Like they spoke a lot about the culture, yes, but they went deep into like the colonization of Hawaii and what happened. And oh, it was incredible. It was like, wow, we didn't even know, couldn't have, that was incredible, to learn. But anyway, I wanted to ask you because of what you shared, especially about the endangered art forms. I also saw that you had on your site like this glass kind of dancing. And I wanted to ask you about that. And does that fall in that same category? Because when I tried to look it up, I couldn't find it. I was like, is it, you know what came up when I tried to look it up?
What?
Harry Potter. I was like, what? I was so confused. So yes, so does that fall in the category of endangered art forms? And what is it exactly?
So that's a challenge, a personal challenge I've done. I've performed that dance different times, and my husband like is not happy about that because it like some sweat. He's like, "Why do you have to do that?" But no. So I just it's a nice challenge, right? And it's very for me, it's very ethereal and a a challenge in the sense of how do you dance in a different way, like when you're so I can use so water goblets. They're turned upside down, so I'm on this. You have to use ones that have thick stems. The first time I did it, I don't know how I didn't just not
Go
break
through.
them all. Like because I was talking to my husband about too the other day. I was like, "Do you remember the first time I did it? And it had the thins. It had a pretty thin stem and a pretty small base." And I don't know. So you use a thick, it has to be thick, right? Because it's carrying your weight. But and then you're on a wooden floor. You can't have the Marley dance floors like you use in ballet or but it's a wooden floor so you can slide and I've played around with all different configurations. I even recruited one of my friends who's a great modern dancer here in San Francisco, like let's do a pas de deux, like a couples goblet dance. And so where he would hold me and we'd do different things and because glass can withstand a lot. And so I just, but practicing doing different things and you can slide around, you can maneuver them around. And that's the challenge for me, I feel like, is to be you're just slightly elevated, but there's that balance factor, which is huge. But then also like the movement, like what movement can I do while I'm still in this space. So I don't know. It's just a fun challenge.
But did you come up with this by yourself, or was this something,
It
is
was
it an art
planted.
form?
So this was planted from a belly dancer up in Ukiah, and a long time ago, I was at her house. She's like, "Oh, there's this goblet dance." And then the more you research, like it, and it is hard to find it, but it does stem more from there. Like I believe maybe the Bedouin, but I'd have to re look back at my research. But I don't know if this is the Bedouin tribe, but off the look. Anyways, but yeah, so she's like, "Yeah, you just turn them over." And then from there, that's all I needed. I was just like, okay, because I never thought about it, right? And then, I even performed at a winery at once up in wine country here in California. I was like, that's so fitting. And I put the glasses on the table and like took them off. And they're just like, "Ah, she's dancing on these."
I imagine, I mean, just that too, because when I was reading about it on your site, I was like, wait a minute. Like, even though, but I'm so nervous. I can't even imagine. Like, I would think like, oh, it's okay. I'm gonna stand this glass and it's gonna hold my weight. But looking even at the images, it made me think of that too. Like this curiosity of how the art of movement and dance and even doing something like that, it must require so much focus. And it reminds me of the whole idea of, we talk about in this realm being firm and flexible, and we can translate that into the feminine and masculine in union, or the physical and energetic in union. So the reason I bring it up too is because I wanted to ask you how that expression, that art form for you, has also been a reflection in your healing or helping you to understand the layers of your existence, your humanness. Does that
Yeah,
tie
no,
in as
definitely.
well?
Yeah, definitely. Because when you think of that as an extreme example, like, so the minute I start to have doubt, or fear, then, then that affects my balance. And then I have to like step off the goblets, right? Like, or, so yeah, it's all about energy. And then, yeah, because I put a blog post on my website because I was really interested, and I interviewed a glass blower and a Stanford professor who works with the aspects of glass, right? So I went to learn more about it on the molecular level and like how can it hold my weight and and it's just because of my science background, I like learning about these things. And but yeah, it's totally it totally all ties together. And even just in dance in general, My favorite, one of my favorite choreographers is Alonzo King. He's a here in San Francisco Blinds Ballet, and he's such a deep yogi, just enlightened, and he brings that to his dancers, and they all convey that as well. But just as kind of he explains too, like when he's working with dancers, and it's the same thing as when you're with shamanic healing or Reiki, you're unpeeling the layers, unpeeling the layers. And as a dancer, I can relate too, like when you start learning different dance forms and like the structure, the pedagogy, that's nice. But then there's also the other aspect, like the aesthetic aspect that kicks in. And just like everything else in mainstream society of like, what's good, what's bad, what's, and so that can also hinder you in a way of like, oh, you don't want to express that yourself fully. Like you, if you start conforming, does that make sense to
Yes.
society? So like, I feel like the truly great dancers are, you just like an energy healing, you're just shedding everything. You're just letting your light shine and you're using your body to communicate what it is that you feel inside, what you know, you're using dance as your method of
Yeah.
sharing everything, sharing yourself to others, and sharing a higher message too. It's nice. Like,
I love your compilation of work. I mean, listen to all of it. It sounds like it all blends beautifully. So I want to wrap it up with this. I would love to know from your lens, the embodiment of all the work that you've shared with us today. How has it changed you? But then also, what about it all has inspired you to share this work with other people?
It's just yeah, I mean, everything has just always come together, and it just helps me on my path to continue to live my life purpose, why I'm here, and also to be myself, to be my true self, and just to continue to be, you know, and that's always, you know, a daily reminder, you know, because it's easy to get influenced, right? But just to find your guiding compass and just stick to that, and don't let anything deter you. And that's what energy healing and everything else has really helped provide me. And that's what I want to share with others, just that you're more than this physical body. And then if people just would realize that, then there'd be so much healing in the world. There'd be so much, you know, we wouldn't have racism. We wouldn't, it would just be utopia. No. And people would
That's
just be able, you wouldn't find people so miserable and depressed because they're not living the life that they're meant to live, right? Or they're stuck in materialism, but materialism doesn't satisfy spirit. So only, you know, so it would create a lot of balance. So that's why I'm trying to instill, and however I can, a little more balance in this world by just reminding people of their inner light and just helping them find that as well. And
that is
that,
beautiful. So, do you only do local work or people work with you remotely as well?
yeah, no, and like as you know, you can work with energy healing Reiki from a distance, and it's just as profound. And I tell people too, like honestly, I have colleagues that do, like I do monthly kind of maintenance, you know, just like a person will go get a massage. I get, you know, because as an energy healer, it's nice to also not always do on yourself, but have
Yes.
someone work on you. And just so I have, and I do that always virtually because it's just easy, right? So, and it's powerful. So I do both. I feel like it's harder for people to wrap their head around, but once they experience the remote, they're like, oh yeah, this is just as profound and helpful.
Yes.
So I do in person here and virtual, and yeah, I love to do both.
Beautiful. And I know that there is an offer that you had for the listeners that you wanted to share. So if you want to share about that before we go today.
Yeah, so on my homepage, and there's a link that you might include, there's
Yes.
I have this kind of intro to distance healing offer, and it's also good for busy executives, busy people too, like where it's just a 20-minute virtual session, which in actuality with our time to chat beforehand and afterhand, it's 30 minutes. But yeah, it's just a nice introduction so you can kind of try it out if you're not if you have no idea what it's about. It's not a big time commitment, it's not a big financial commitment. So I want to offer any of your listeners like a 2-for-1. So
Perfect.
usually I so if they just have to mention your podcast, and then I'll give it 2-for-1 so they can try it twice.
Beautiful. Yeah. So I will put the link in for everyone listening. You can go to Rosalind's website, which is livehealtravel.com. And if you sign up for this healing experience, mention Reiki Radio so that you can get your two for
Yeah,
one.
20. Yeah, just the 20-minute. Yeah, 20-minute virtual session.
Yes. No, it's very, thank you. That's a very generous offer. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time to share your work with us today. Again, you can follow Rosalind at livehealtravel.com, learn more about Reiki, shamanic energy healing, as well as her wellness retreats. There are three already posted for 2025. So thank you for being here with us today, Beauty. I will see you soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, beautiful alchemist, I want to thank Rosalind again for coming to have this conversation with us, sharing her experiences with Reiki and shamanic energy healing, as well as sharing a bit about intuition and relationship to the clairs. If you want to learn more about Rosalind and her work, be sure to visit her website, livehealtravel.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at livehealtravel. And of course, the link to all of this is down in the show description, including the link to her offer. She has get a 20-minute session, buy one, get one free. And the link again is available down in the show description. I want to remind you as well, you are welcome to join me for Reiki Chats on Tuesdays, which is 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. We also have the Seeker Circles on the second Sundays of every month, unless, you know, sometimes I can't and I post that on the app. So if you want to join me for these free discussions, these community conversations, be sure to download the Energetic Alchemist app. I look forward to seeing you all soon. Have a gorgeous day and remember to always journey in love.